Broadcasting live from the Business Radio X studios in Atlanta, Georgia, it's time for Atlanta Business Radio, spotlighting the city's best businesses and the people who lead them.
Hello, everybody, and welcome once again to another exciting and informative edition of Atlanta Business Radio. Today is Monday, May 23rd. I hope you had a good weekend. Thank you so much for joining us here today in studio. We're looking forward to a great lineup of guests and hearing their story of how they're changing the world and the business community here in Atlanta, Georgia. I'm Ryan McPherson, your host today. Alongside me at the controls and keeping everything straight is producer-engineer Alex Gossett-Shiflett. Good morning, Alex.
Good morning.
All right. Did you have a good weekend?
I did.
Yeah.
Enjoyed the weather.
It was fantastic. This is the Chamber of Commerce weather we had this weekend here in Atlanta. Hope you got out there and enjoyed it. And get ready to sit down and enjoy today's episode. Make sure you're connected with us on social media at Atlanta Biz Radio on Twitter, Atlanta B-I-Z Radio. Also, you can follow the network, Business Radio X, at Business Radio X on Twitter as well. And check us out on Facebook. See all of the photos and thoughts and comments of our in-studio guests. And without further ado, let's go around the table and introduce our all-star panel here today. First, let's say hello to Kevin Garrity. He is president of Revenue Research. Good morning, Kevin.
Good morning. Thanks for having me.
My pleasure. How are you doing?
Never better. Like you said, the weather's great.
Yeah. Good times in Atlanta. Yeah.
Yeah.
So we look forward to talking to you more in detail, but let's also introduce to the table here today, Joanne Holmes. She's with Holmes at Law. How are you, Joanne?
I'm really well, Ryan. Thanks for having me.
My pleasure. Thanks for joining us. Holmes at Law. How long have you been around?
I've practiced law in Atlanta for 17 years started my own practice last year.
All right. Well, we look forward to hearing more about that in great detail. So please stay tuned and stick with us. But let's also introduce our headliner here today, Thad Oviatt with Park Int Cycles. How are you, Thad?
Good morning. I'm pretty good. It's a nice morning to be here.
Did you ride your bike to work?
No, I did not ride my bike to work. Atlanta traffic is crazy out there.
It is. And we would encourage people to you know, ride safely.
Safely, yes.
Yes. And riding in traffic is not often the easiest or the safest
way. It's getting better.
Oh, that's good. So let's talk to you a little bit about Park Int Cycles and your background. Tell our listeners first, you know, where you're from and how'd you get started in all this?
I am actually a native Atlanta person.
Nice.
Yes, I grew up in East Cobb and did school there, went to school in Georgia. Mm-hmm. And it was actually after I was at Georgia Tech that I went to Georgia Southern to do a second undergraduate degree that I had a friend of mine who was riding his bike to class a lot. And unfortunately, in a week, he got two of his road bikes stolen.
Really?
Yes.
Like right off the racks?
Like right off the racks. Man. And the second time, they left a cut bike lock chain on the ground with a sticky note, had a smiley face and thanks written across it.
Like they were professional bike thieves.
Oh, like they were just having like, thank you very much for the extra bike. Appreciate it. You know, if you want to put the next one out there, we'll take that too.
Right.
You know. So that's when I decided, you know, there's got to be a better idea for this, better thing going on for this. So that's when I started on this thing called an electric bike rack.
Yeah.
And the idea is that you just go ahead, you ride up to this, you push your bicycle up into it, you pull out your cell phone or use a key card to activate it, and the bike rack actually locks up your bicycle, securing the wheel and the frame.
With an electronic system that is all activated by your smartphone, and your bike stays locked on that rack, and the rack itself is fixed to the ground. So there's no way to steal that bike.
No, there's no way to steal the bike. There's actually good old bars that you put through the spokes, another one you put through the frame. Mm-hmm. So it's one of those where if you really had a good grinder or something like that that shoot a lot of sparks up in the air,
right.
Then yeah, probably.
Maybe.
But it's enough to the point where people are like, something's wrong, something's going on here that bike wouldn't be stolen.
Right. And, you know, bicycle thievery, I imagine, is a crime of opportunity. A lot of people don't wake up today and say, you know, I'm going to go out and steal a bike. But when they need something or whatever, they're of that mindset, it happens to be right then and there.
Oh, yeah. We haven't progressed past the horse and hitch days. And the only thing is we don't hang bicycle thieves. In some places, mm-hmm. they still hang horse thieves. And it's still, you just have your bicycle, you have a lock that you tie it to something, whether it's a tree, a fence, or a building, a bus stop or whatever. But you're still, it's only going to take like 30 seconds to break through whatever you have tied your bicycle up to, you know. Yeah. It's just the nature of the way it is. And but people trust, you know, oh, I bought a $200 lock. It's unbreakable. And next thing you know, they walk out and their bicycle's not there.
That's good. So this is an electronic bike rack that kind of hugs your bicycle as you walk away and keeps it safe for you, right?
We like to say that it hugs your bike.
Yeah.
And it does have two arms that you put the bicycle up into. And we were trying to describe how to illustrate it to people with just words at some point. You see a picture of it's got two arms reaching out that you put the bicycle up into. And one night we were just joking around and throwing ideas around. And son, I just said it just hugs your bike.
Yeah, hugs your bike.
said, write it down. Yeah. Write it down now. Get it, down.
I'm writing it down too. Hugs your bike. Very good. And, you know, I was just recently out in San Diego, and you can rent bikes off an electronic bike rack out there. You just swipe your credit card right there on the thing. You rent the bike, ride it around for $7 an hour, and return it to the electronic bike route. So pretty neat deal that what's going on out there. How do you see this playing out in Atlanta? Where do you want to see some of these? And are you already out there?
Well, we are not currently out there. I am a garage startup, so I am actually in my, my parents' house in their garage. So my dad totally loved me to move out of the house and everything like that to get the business up off the ground. The problem is those rent-a-bike type situations that you see out where you were out in the area in D.C., New York, and all that. They work with bicycles that work really great on flat land.
Yes.
We don't really have a whole lot of that around Atlanta.
No.
So there are bike shares coming into Atlanta that is basically just a U-lock with your bicycle, and there's a key that you can type in, text in to get the key out to unlock your bike. There's a few of those popping up around Atlanta, and that's actually what the Atlanta bike share is, what's going on. And I think that's great that they're coming in, that they're showing more bikes being ridden around and everything. It's just that it doesn't really serve the people that have bicycles that want to ride their bike to work. They want to ride their bike down to the store or to the bar or someplace to go get drinks because they're still just locking them up. So we want to access that community that wants to ride their bike out and be able to lock it up safely and not have that one. As I was at one place, and they had one guy stand there and watch the bicycles while the rest of them had a good time.
That's not cool.
No. You know, you want to just be able to make sure your bike is secure and safe and you're not constantly looking over your shoulder to see if it's still there.
That's great. So we're talking with Thad Oviatt. He's with Park Int Cycles, a garage startup straight out of East Cobb. And what do you need now to help grow the business? What are you looking for?
Right now, we are looking for capital. Not much capital, like $50,000, to get a few stations out in the area, but also to build out the entire electronic part, the commercial-facing app and all that, so we can start gathering the data of who's parking where. And that way you can go ahead and park your bike at different locations and not have to worry about, you know, signaling out that location or trying to figure out what to do. Much like the car parking apps that are out down on Ponce City Market, those type of things. Those are what we just need to build out now. So we're looking for capital to get those built up and moved out. In fact, we manufacture here in Conyers, Georgia. So we're a completely Georgia business, and we just think that it would really benefit the Georgia community with all the bike lanes they're being put in.
Yeah, and now I have to ask, if I'm riding my bike and I come up to one of these electronic bike racks, is it going to cost me to park my bike in your rack?
Right now, no.
Okay,
it's going to be free to park and everything. In fact, we actually, as Park Int Cycles, do not charge for parking. We would sell the units to a property. Now, if they wanted to charge for parking, we would suggest like $2 a park. And we got that from polling the actual bicycle community as what they'd feel comfortable with. It's up to the parking community. We talk to like Linear Parking and all those type places where there's such a variety of different parking charges and everything that for us to set a certain price for it just didn't seem right. But yeah, if the situation where we sell to a property and they choose to say, hey, you know, we're getting enough revenue from the people coming in here so frequently at a coffee shop from parking their bikes and everything, no one's going to charge for it. No big deal.
But so you're hoping to sell these units to property owners, property management companies. That's how you hope to generate revenue for your racks and ultimately produce more racks, right?
Yep, that's the idea. Just get some produce more. That way you can even hire more people to actually make those racks, distribute the racks, and even include the local bike shops in case for some reason somebody decided to slash the tires on the bike rack. We can say, okay, well, there's a bike shop next door. Go ahead and go talk to them, even work out some kind of deal with them, or even Uber if for some reason your bike's not able to be ridden due to some, I don't know, maybe there was a car crash in the area and just have to take out the rack with the car crash. Because if you put something near a streetscape, it's going to get wrecked somehow.
And your rack needs a power source too, I imagine, right?
Right now, actually, we are plugging it into the wall, but it's only 12 volts. I mean, you use more power doing toast in the morning than you do powering this whole system.
But it could limit to where you can put these racks. You couldn't put it in the middle of a park, maybe. Or
actually, we could put it in the middle of a park because of the low power requirement on it and the way we've designed it to hold in a backup battery system. We could do a solar play with it and put it out in the middle of nowhere with a solar panel on it. And that way, when you're riding on the trail, you just see one of those, you push your bike in and just park it and go enjoy the view.
Yeah, right. You want to park your bike, maybe walk to town or walk to another part of the park, but you don't want to leave your bike unsecured. An electronic rack, you know, it could be there. But then again, you're not always bringing around the money to pay for it. So you would hope that the park service or whoever's maintaining the facilities would be able to buy.
Well, we wouldn't have any payment actually in the rack itself. The whole situation would be that the payment would be through the cell phone app associated with it, so that it goes pretty much wherever a cell phone goes, you know.
So with the app development, it's probably going to tell you where the bikes racks are located and how you can pay and everything along those lines.
Correct.
All right. Fantastic. So, Alex?
Yeah, I have a question that I saw on the internet this weekend. The new bicycles that are also the treadmill. Have you seen those?
Like, oh, they're elliptical bicycles. Yes.
Right. You're walking. It's a treadmill and you're standing up, but it's a bicycle moving.
Huh.
And I was wondering if, like, eventually, would we be able to park those?
Well, with our design, actually, because I designed it after researching hundreds of different bicycle frames and found that we fit 90% of the bicycles that are on the market.
Okay.
And those hugging arms on the bike rack actually lower and raise to be able to fit those different varieties of bicycles. So if it's anywhere near an actual bicycle design, then we would be able to lock it up.
Yeah, okay.
Even you can put your bicycle in forward or backwards, because people are always concerned about, you only lock one wheel in the frame, what's going to happen to my other wheel? Put it in backwards, take the front wheel with you into work, or if the tires are skinny enough, put the front wheel with the back wheel and lock them both up.
Yep, that's a good option as well. As we see Atlanta growing more and towards this being a smart city, where we're all connected, we're using the resources available, where do you see us positioned as far as growing into that direction?
I see us positioned very well, actually. Atlanta is, I mean, back in the 90s, they were a big consumer play, so there were a lot of products coming out. With the technology that's happened in the early 2000s on the SaaS programs and everything, so we have the technology. And now we're getting back to the fact that we have manufacturing in the Atlanta area. We have warehouses. We have technology. There's a big chance for Atlanta to become a major player in the smart city campaign. I mean, we have the connected car research laboratories that are going on in Midtown area, in downtown. And it's just one of those where we have all the ingredients to be a major player in the smart city arena.
Yeah, and as a startup community, we're doing great things as well. You see all kinds of new businesses growing and developing here. Atlanta's often compared to the Silicon Valley of the South, but I think Silicon Valley didn't have anything on Atlanta as far as I'm concerned. All they have is tech. We have so much more here to offer. Our people are more diverse, and our culture is just so more rich in that nature. So, but for you, you're born and raised in Atlanta. You've seen it develop, and you see it trending in the right direction.
Yeah, I back when I first was born here, I was living in the boondocks of East Cobb. But having lived there my whole life, I've watched urban sprawl spread out over the whole area. I've watched Atlanta grow with the Olympics and everything that came through. And I've watched the technology grow. And right, we're not Silicon Valley of the South. We're something different.
Yes.
And we want to be something different. And it's one of those where we want to make our own name in this situation. We just don't want to be a repeat of somebody else. And we have all the ingredients to do that with all the different startup capabilities and the incubators. I think there's like, well, over a dozen incubators for startups in the Atlanta area. I know I belong to the ATDC as an Accelerate member there. And it has done wonders for me to figure out what entrepreneurship is, what's going on, and how do I take my thing that locks stuff up. When I first started, that was actually my pitch. It does stuff.
Yeah.
And actually refine that into, it's an electronic bike rack that hugs your bike while locking the wheel on the frame. It helps to understand what the whole idea of an entrepreneurship is. I mean, I have 4 degrees and one of them is an MBA, but at the same point in time, that doesn't really help you when you're just trying to start a business.
You're right.
So the ATDC and other programs like that and other startup workspaces as well that I brought up around the Atlanta area have really, really helped grow that community and helped launch a bunch of really good startups already, and are probably a lot more in the near future.
So it's been nothing but an asset for you to be camped down there at ATDC and working with other like-minded individuals to help grow your company and make sure that there's plenty of bike racks around the town.
I can for sure say that today I would not be where I am if I had not had the community around me to be able to get the connections I need to build my company the way it is today.
Very well said. Very, very simply put, but so effective for sure. And we're so happy to have you as an Atlantan and kind of leading this charge. And so we look forward to more great things from you and Park Int Cycles in 2016 and beyond. Please tell our listeners how they can get in touch with you.
Well, you can find us online at Park ENT Cycles, because we ensure, trust your bicycle will be there when you get back. That.com, it's on the website. We're on Facebook. We're on YouTube. We're on Pinterest. We're on
Instagram.
We're on Twitter.
Yep.
Park Ent Cycles. That's Park ENT Cycles. And right now we have actually a fully functioning working demo prototype with key card access and phone access that we're demoing around the Atlanta metro area.
Right. Any events or places people can find you soon? Some live demos?
Right now we're working on Ponce City Market. We're trying to get this out around the Beltline. For
yep.
any of the areas around the Beltline, if you want to have secure bicycle parking, contact me, Thad, at Park Ent Cycles. Thadmcdonald.com.
And Thad, make sure you come back and visit us again when you have some new exciting news to share. We'd be happy to feature you again here on Atlanta Business Radio.
It's been a pleasure.
All right. Thank you so much. And now let's turn our attention back over to Joanne Holmes with Holmes at Law. She's been doing it for 17 years at her own deal. She's a graduate of Stanford University and Emory School of Law. So how long have you been in Atlanta?
I moved to Atlanta 20 years ago when I came to start my studies at Emory Law.
And so you haven't left since. You just liked Atlanta ever since then, right?
I've been here for the most part. I did leave for a couple of years to take a job in my first in-house role. And I every time I got on a plane to leave Hartsfield-Jackson, mm-hmm. I said, I want to be here. So right? I came right back to Atlanta.
And so you're back here now practicing your own law. But you did work in corporate law or at a bigger law firm before that, right?
That's right. I started out at a firm called Troutman Sanders mm-hmm. in the Bank of America Plaza in the city back in 1999 during the sort of dot-com boom. And I started in the technology and intellectual property practice group, which was great experience because I had small clients who were startups, nonprofits, and then large Fortune 500 companies like Walmart and Microsoft and yes. Chick-fil-A.
Right. And then at some point you decided, you know, I want to set up my own shop. What was that kind of process like for you?
Well, actually, when I left Troutman Sanders, I went in-house and I became the lawyer for international businesses. So folks might be familiar with the soda RC Cola.
Yes. Royal Crown.
That's right. And so the company that I first joined owned RC Cola outside of North America. So we sold products in 70 countries around the world. Oh. And I served on that management team as well as being the lawyer. So I got to see every facet of the business from R&D to marketing, sales, mm-hmm. hitting financial targets, which was a great background. I was there for almost a decade. And then I moved to another Georgia-based company where I came in to do the acquisition integration. It was owned by private equity. We had operations in North America, Europe, Africa, and Australia. So the mm-hmm. sun never set on my clients. But it was a great experience because, again, I served on the management team of a business that had hundreds of million dollars in revenue and got to see every facet of the business. So some days I might be handling the police are on the phone. Someone is using our chemicals in a way they shouldn't be using them. What should we do to, you know, we've spent seven figures on equipment and we need help making sure that we get the right value out of that. So it was sometimes baptism by fire, but it was a great proving ground to step out and support small and mid-sized businesses.
And that's what you do now. Your main focus of your practice is supporting small to mid-sized businesses.
That's correct. So over the course of my career, I've always done intellectual property. So those are the things like the brand names, the logos, the slogans like hug your bicycle.
Hug your bike.
And all of the sorts of creative content that Kevin's team helped develop. So I've always had the pleasure of working in the intellectual property realm. And then, like I said, serving on business management teams, I did everything, managing litigation, contracts, all the sorts of things that a business needs with their customers and vendors to run and grow.
And so do businesses contact you when they're starting their business or only when they're in trouble? Or what do you advise?
You know what? I work with lots of businesses who are starting up as well as those that are established. So if someone is starting up, I'm giving them a long-term view around what are the foundational mm-hmm. things you need to do. For example, to protect your personal assets, making sure you're setting up some sort of corporate entity, be that an S-Corp, C-Corp, LLC. I'm talking to them about the value of intellectual property and how when they're considering an exit strategy, it's going to be really important to make sure that their IP was locked up and protected early. And I'm talking to them about things like making sure that your contracts protect your interests, but also help grow your business.
I see. Because as your businesses may be different, some of the same legal matters may be similar. And that's what you're trying to help. Do you have one particular industry that you focus on? Or are you open to helping any small to mid-sized business?
You know, the things that I focus on are the things that are core across businesses. So, you know, if you haven't had an occasion to speak to someone, thankfully, the audience that you have on your show today is very sophisticated around intellectual property. But one of the core things I do is explain what's IP.
Right. You may not know you're even in possession of something valuable. You just think it's a great idea. Yes. And that's what I found my business on. But protecting it, securing it, and making sure that no one else adopts it is where you come in.
That's absolutely correct, Ryan. So one of the core things that I say to people is everybody has a brand name. That's what you call your products or services. When I'm teaching IP, I say, what's that thing you begged for at Christmas or on your birthday. Mm. And some people say for me, it was a Transformer or it was the Air Jordans, a big wheel, a bicycle. And those things, when people think back to their childhood, those were all brands that meant something to them and that built a legacy in their mind. Maybe they buy those same brands for those kids, their kids today. Mm-hmm. So helping people understand the words that you use, be they slogans, brand names, or the logos that you use, have a real value in communicating the quality of your products and services to your customer base. And intellectual property, certainly for folks who are in the startup community, understand every business has IP, and IP is a core facet of valuing that business. So making sure that you understand that and consistently protect it is key.
All right. We're speaking with Joanne Holmes, founder and attorney over there at Holmes at Law. Is it just you or do you have some staff members helping you?
It's just me. So I really relate to my clients because I am a small business. And I joke around, I come from a background where I had hundreds of millions in revenue to work with. And now I've sort of shrunk that down. And part of that for me is understanding that small businesses in particular don't have a budget to just sort of throw and sit in a bank account with an attorney. So a lot of what I do is on a flat fee or a do not exceed rate basis so that small businesses can understand this is going to be my legal spend and I'm not going to exceed that budget so they can feel confident. I also think it's part of my responsibility to understand their business strategy and help them navigate so that they can say, okay, Joe, I understand maybe I need to do these four things, but right now, what's the highest priority? Mm-hmm. And I help them with that process and really try to get in and understand what are you trying to achieve so I can do the legal work that supports you getting there.
A small business. And I would say that Joanne at Holmes at Law is a RSB, Alex, a really small business. She's only one yes. person over there. You got a question?
Yeah, I do. You also handle trademark and copyright. Mm-hmm. Share a little bit about that.
Sure. So trademarks, copyrights, domain names, patents, internet law, all those are intellectual property. They're all under that umbrella. So trademarks are your brand name, slogans, logos. Those are the things you use to uniquely identify your products or services. Copyrights are your creative works. So your advertising, your photographs, your logos can also be the subject of copyright. Copyrights are a great thing to understand because, like trademarks, they can be licensed and create a revenue model. So, for example, Subway has a really popular brand for sandwiches. They took that revenue model and licensed it. You can go the traditional franchise route in doing that, or you can do other things with your contracts where you make sure you protect your trademarks and your copyrights, and then you can license those to others for revenue sources. One key thing that I want to make sure the audience knows that's counterintuitive sometimes. When you hire a creative professional to create something that is the subject matter of copyright, that might be developing your logo, that might be doing your advertising, that might be developing your website. When you pay them, you don't own what they created for you. It's actually necessary to have what's called a work for hire or a copyright assignment agreement in place. And the reason that's important is down the line when you want to adapt that logo or improve your website or use that photo in a different way, you want to own that asset. And again, this goes back to understanding intellectual property as a core business asset so that when you go to sell your business or value your business, you have all of those within your pool of ownership.
Thank goodness that we have somebody smart on the case like Joanne Holmes over here, because for me, I used to be a small business owner and there was lots of things that I probably should have done to protect myself, but I did not. Mm-hmm. And I didn't know it was time for me to reach out and contact someone like you. When would be, from your perspective, a good time for a small business owner to pick up the phone and say, hey, I need to contact Joanne Holmes?
You know, I sort of have made it a personal mission to change the perception of when you call a lawyer. So I think people see in media that lawyers are litigators. Mm-hmm. I'm not a litigator. I'm a transactional attorney. So my goal is to be your business ally, which is actually the firm's slogan, and help you understand upfront how we can draft contracts, for example, that help grow your business. Right. So if you have great terms with your customer or with your vendor and you want that relationship to go on as long as it's profitable to your business, for example, might want to have evergreen terms in your contract. So nobody's coming back and looking at those legal terms again. However, if you're just trying to get your foot in the door, for example, and you didn't negotiate the best terms the first time around, maybe we want to have a stop built in 6 months or a year where we can come back and renegotiate some of those terms and get you on better footing with that customer or that vendor. I also think about some people don't start up from scratch. Sometimes folks buy a business, and oftentimes that's with someone they're familiar with. Mm-hmm. I consider myself the advocate to help educate that client and make sure they know, let's get a third party audit so that we understand truly what the revenue is of that business. Let's make sure you understand what the employees' responsibilities are. What are the benefits and the compensation? And are there any disputes that you're going to inherit that might bring on a big cost and risk for you when you buy that business? So to answer your question, Ryan, around when you contact an attorney, I want to develop long-term, effective, efficient relationships where I understand my client's business and I can help them achieve their goals. I certainly can help with disputes. And I think a lot of times if reasonable folks will come to the table, litigation isn't necessary. But my focus is on being successful, making sure everybody understands how to do that on the front end.
Yeah, so you're kind of an ally in the corner there to help when needed. So don't wait until you're in trouble or wait till you're being contacted by other attorneys before you call. And you know, somebody get to know right out of the gate. And you may not need your services right away, but someone to have on call and you know, coordinating with when it comes to growing your business for sure. And so, and then you're also, I see speaking a lot, you're giving back a lot, you're out there in the community. It's very important to you, not only personally and professionally, to stay involved that way, I imagine.
That's correct. You know, community service is a requirement at my house. I'm a believer that to whom much is given, much is required. And so I teach for SCORE, which is a longtime resource partner for the Small Business Administration. Taught a class earlier this month on business concept feasibility. I have some tools on my website, which is holmesatlaw.com, because over the years, I've had so many people come to me and say, what are the first things I should think about when I'm starting a business? So I've actually set up a free resource through my website where you can go and in less than 15 minutes sort of get your foundation around what are the legal issues that I should think of when I'm starting a business at no cost. I had a lot of fun last week with a local high school, Discovery High, where they have an entrepreneurship program. And I went in and did a Shark Tank with them.
Nice.
And the week before that, I went and taught them some fundamentals around business law and intellectual property protection. And it was great because when I first came in, the kids were looking at me like, who's this lady? Why isn't she here? And by the time I left, their teacher was saying, okay, Ms. Holmes has got to go. She can't answer any more questions. So it's just great to give back. There's so much innovation happening in our community. And having been a Stanford grad and coming out of that innovation culture, I'm so excited to see it happening in the Atlanta community.
It definitely is, for sure. And Joanna's not only practicing it, but she's lived it. And, you know, she started her own business, so she can give you advice from that perspective. Where do you see your business growing over the next year or more and beyond?
I have to say, really what I'm focused on is setting the right foundation, the same things that I advise my clients to do. So making sure that I am building lasting relationships. And a lot of times, because I do initial consultations over the phone for 30 minutes completely for free, I'll have a conversation with someone and I know people will be surprised to hear this. I say, you don't need to hire an attorney. These are things you can do on your own. Here's how you get to those resources. If you run into a stumbling block, call me back. Mm-hmm. So I'm always thoughtful about building long-lasting relationships and making sure that my clients truly do see me as their ally and not someone who is focused on bringing in a dollar every time they pick up the phone and call me.
Right. And that can be a lot of dollars when you're picking up and calling lawyers, unfortunately. But you know that they are there to service you, especially Joanne Holmes at Holmes at Law. Tell our listeners how they can find you or get more information about your services.
Sure. So the best way to reach me is through my website, which is, again, www.holmes, H-O-L-M-E-S-A-T-L-A-W.com. If you do a Google search, that's Holmes at Law, all one word with the at symbol. All of my contact information, email, phone number are at the website, Holmes at Law. And I would love to be a resource and continue to provide the information that I have from larger national organizations and help grow our local businesses.
Well, we loved having you part of the show here today. If you have some new exciting news to share or some more good information for small businesses, please come back and be a guest. We'd love to feature you again on Atlanta Business Radio.
Thank you, Ryan.
All right. And now it's time for Mr. Kevin Garrity. Did you learn anything, Kevin?
Oh, this was amazing.
About bicycles and law so far, right? Yeah, good. Yes. And Kevin Garrity is with Revenue Research, Inc. He's a president and responsible for the creation of $3 billion in document corporate revenue. That's incredible.
It has been an incredible ride, and it really has been leveraging some pretty smart intellectual property that's been developed over the years.
Intellectual property seems to be a theme here
today. Yes, it is.
That's right. So let's go back to the beginning. Where are you from, and when did this all get started for you?
Oh, well, originally, I also moved to Atlanta about 20 years ago, and originally from Ireland.
Okay.
So, yes, so the accent is gone. I've stopped drinking, so.
Very good, right? Well, I got a little Scotch Irish in me, you know, from mm-hmm. So a very fond of that side of the pond for sure. But 20 years, I think you're considered a native now.
I would think so.
Right. Yes, 20 years right. in Atlanta. So, but you not only been 20 years in Atlanta, but spent a number of years, you know, growing businesses and everything. But now you have a great way for advertising agencies to understand their audience better. Is that right?
Well, yes. As people are aware, there's been a huge growth in the capability of machine learning and data science. Mm-hmm. And that's what we've been doing over the past 20 years. And really, the current incarnation of revenue research is just a flowering of all that, along with the sort of incredible tools that have been developed over the past 5 years.
Yeah, and big data is just growing and growing and growing, but right. we got to be able to use that information. It's one thing to collect it all, but it's another thing to understand it and then use it to your advantage.
And so what's happening, everyone knows what's wrong with advertising. You go out, you search for a pair of shoes, you buy them, and 6 months later, they're still trying to sell you a pair of shoes. If you're a company, you're still paying for those ads, and if you're a consumer, you are really annoyed with those ads. Intelligent mining and machine learning will allow companies to stay on top of that and not waste that money, and it'll keep consumers a lot happier as well.
Right, and that's ultimately what you want to do is make sure the customer is getting what they want, but they're not being turned off by your brand or your approach after the purchase or the follow-up. And that's a big misconception these days too.
Well, I think the real change that's happening is a move from what used to be interruptive advertising to what we call supportive advertising. And this is a generation shift where people, CMOs who, old school CMOs who think the only way you sell is by interrupting someone's television show and blasting, you know, buy now.
Or on the radio shouting commercials at you as you're driving to work.
Right. And the internet doesn't work that way quite simply because people have control. They can just click away. Mm-hmm. And so what we've tried to do is make sure that the advertising we're presenting aligns with what people are looking for. Search is a great environment for that. But also, I was explaining to my father, he got a text from his pharmacy, say, come pick up your medication, right? Mm-hmm. What a great experience. That was, people don't think of that as an ad, but it is an ad. It's a supportive way of saying, hey, this is time, et cetera. And so the sort of ability of systems mm-hmm. to deliver that kind of value to people really negates the need for these interruptive sort of loud blasting ads.
It certainly does. You can target your audience. You can dial it in on many different platforms right. and really get that message clearly and understood more as opposed to just shouting at the masses from the rooftops
right.
about the latest on your carpet sale or something.
Exactly. And if you there's a great quote from John Wanamaker. He used to be a department store manager. And he said, half my advertising is wasted. I just don't know which half.
Yeah.
Right? Well, again, on the World Wide Web, because people are clicking, because you've got trackability, you do know which half. Mm-hmm. And you can be a lot smarter about making decisions on who I talk to and when I talk to them.
So many digital platforms out there, and social media is changing all this. People can start engaging their clients even in less cost and more at reach kind of perspective.
Yeah, absolutely. And so our first group of clients is a hotel chain. One of the things that is happening on the internet is it is now possible to search not just for a hotel in Atlanta, but a hotel in Atlanta for certain dates. Well, if your hotel is full during those dates, you don't want to show up for that search. Whereas if you've got room, you really do.
But that can change from week to week.
And that can change. So it's very difficult for an advertising agency with people staying on top of the huge number of dates, the huge number of hotels, the huge number of different rooms. Whereas with the machine learning algorithms, they're smart enough to say, okay, this one, that one, that mm-hmm. one, but not those two. And deliver, again, this whole idea of what people are looking for, be there. If they're not looking, don't be there.
Right. So how do I know if my media is working for me? If I'm a business owner out there and I've tried different avenues there, how do I know if I'm getting the return that I need to get?
Well, this is the wonderful thing about the trackability of the World Wide Web. And of course, I do want to emphasize that people are rightly concerned and about creepy advertising,
yes,
right?
Right. That's we hear that a lot here in the studio.
And again, the important thing to realize is it's very different to, let's say, what the NSA or whatever is doing, where they actually want to know who this guy is, mm-hmm. right? Advertisers, particularly digital advertisers, don't want to know who you are. They just want to know that you're a person that is interested in this particular product or service. And so there's a lot of a Chinese wall basically between the sort of personal information you have and the actual identity stuff that they need.
And advertising getting more and more localized. You could have four members from the same family using the same iPad, but that iPad knows, or the way they search, and they start, one family member's looking at bicycles, the other's looking at shoes, the other, and they begin to get the advertising based on all within the same house.
Yeah, well, it is very much the case. If you see 1,000 texts a month from that device, you know it's not the dad, it's the teenager.
Right, and we saw recently, we were up in Chattanooga visiting our Chattanooga Business Radio studio up there, and we were talking to some guests, and they are saying now that advertising, even on your TV, can be different from your neighbor. So you're getting, one household, almost all the same cable network, is getting a different set of advertising as their neighbor, and so on and so forth down the block.
This is the big change that's happening. So this is the year that online advertising surpasses TV in terms of sheer volume of spend. I believe it's around $140 billion worldwide. For digital advertising
and
growing very fast. What's happening, of course, with the technology, if you've bought a new TV in the past year or two, you'll find you have a clicker for it, right? And that is much more like your experience with a browser on a computer. Mm-hmm. And so that clickability, first of all, allows you to actually buy from your home, but it also allows the TV to know, okay, that information goes back to the advertisers to make decisions.
Yeah, no doubt. And you're right, that brings in that creep factor, but I think the more people use it and experience it and realize that it is not somebody doing it for nefarious reasons, they really want to understand you and your buying habits better.
Well, again, and it goes back to those shoes that keep following you around, and I bought them 6 months ago. That's the creepy part. It's like, you know, you sort of knew I was looking, but you don't know enough to leave me alone when I bought.
Yes.
And so that takes a lot of the creep factor out of it.
And we're speaking with Kevin Garrity, Revenue Research Inc. He is the president over there, the big chief and man in charge. And so what's next out there in 2016 beyond for your company and for this whole space?
Well, right now we're very focused on search, because search, again, is that I've raised my hand. It's a very easy to see how supportive it is. We are going to move into display advertising, but in a very transparent and intelligent way. And
display advertising? You mean like billboards?
No. So let me be clear. When you search on the search engine, a lot of those results are ads. Mm-hmm. And so we buy those. And so next year, what we're looking at is looking at display, which are not the search engines, but CNN, New York Times, et cetera, and seeing the ads there.
Right. And what does your typical client look like? Who generally picks up the phone and engages you for your services?
It's a chief marketing officer at a mid to large firm. And mm-hmm. and what we've managed to do the way you started this was, you've made billions of dollars for clients. And we actually have. And it's because we've taken revenue streams that were being managed okay, but not particularly well, and made significant impact on the revenue that's coming in. And when you do that, when you drive an incremental lift in revenue, if you've got, let's say, a small profit margin, but a large revenue stream, which many of our larger firms do, managing traditional models, that increase falls all the way through to the bottom line, and you actually see huge jumps in profitability.
I'm so glad we got you out there on the case, because this is stuff that is so detailed, so intricate, and it's evolving each and every day. Where do you go to stay up to date on the latest and greatest cutting edge technology?
There are a lot of great websites, but one of the things that has really helped our firm has been involved with ATDC, yes, which is the accelerator at Georgia Tech downtown. Just very supportive environment. And again, because Atlanta is different from Silicon Valley. Silicon Valley's solutions tend to be very business-to-consumer facing, whereas we've got a lot more variability in what we do. I'm mm-hmm. a business-to-business guy, mm-hmm. and so getting in to talk to the larger firms here in Atlanta has been a lot easier now that I'm part of ATDC.
Sure, you carry that around with you. People want to talk to you, want to know more about you. And for our listeners who don't know, Kevin received the Edelman Laureate Award in 1996 and 2016 for Outstanding Operations Research Practice. What do you? 10 years apart, but that's got to be just as exciting.
So it really speaks to the fact that everything that's new is old.
Because it's cyclical. Everything comes back again, right?
Yeah, so people are hearing a lot about big data and and data science and machine learning and that sort of thing. But if you watch that movie, The Imitation Game, that was a big deal for us. It all comes out of the World War II, the scientists that really made a difference there. A lot of that stuff came back and started helping businesses. So the original machine learning algorithms come out of the 1950s and 60s.
Mm-hmm. And so where do you have that award hanging? Is that in your office or at your house?
That's definitely at the office.
Nice. Very, very nice. The family is not impressed.
They don't care.
And also he received the DM News MarTech Award for Data Science in 2015. So you just awards, making money, solving problems. I mean, is there anything else you don't do?
So the award thing is very important in advertising. Advertisers love to give each other awards. So
kind of like Hollywood in that sense.
Oh, yeah, very much so.
Yeah. Well, very good. And Atlanta, you said it's a great part of the ATDC down there, but the overall startup community and business community, how has that been for you?
It's just been a huge education. Again, just sitting, having a cup of coffee with your other two guests here, I learned so much about patents and what I'm doing now in order to patent my stuff and what I should be doing. I've got to go home and start working on it right now. So that's an experience that happens daily in the ATDC is I'm sitting down with people. And you wouldn't think that what's bicycle and advertising got to do with each other, but
learning and definitely helps, and connecting with like-minded individuals is what we do here on Business Radio X, both on the air and in the studio. And so tell us, tell our listeners, Kevin, how they can find out more information about you and Revenue Research Inc.
So revenueresearch.net is our website. I have a mononym, I believe it's called, like Share or Sting. It's mine is KQuant, KQUANT.
Okay.
Not quite as catchy, but that's my Gmail address. That's my Twitter account, that sort of thing. So easy to find.
And when folks can find you when you're not at ATDC working hard, where can folks find you in and around Atlanta? What do you like to do in your off time?
There's a number of things. Like I say, you want to give back to the community, and that's actually part of the Atlanta spirit. And that's very much in the business community. Most of the people you work, you meet also say, and how are you involved? Mm-hmm. I have a history, and I have three boys, so we do a lot of martial arts, we've started doing a little bit of teaching for kids at Camp Sunshine, which is Twin Lakes thing. Mm-hmm. We've also done it with some children that maybe have fell foul of the law, and the discipline and the sort of the respect that's taught in the martial arts is really valuable for those
kids.
Very
good. And so you're doing great things. And I believe, you know, as our politicians in Washington and elsewhere become less and less effective and more weak, it's up to the business leaders to make those social changes. And then from a president's perspective or CEO suite, you are in a position to do social good, not only for your employees, but for the rest of the community. And so we just continue to resonate with everything you said and certainly support your mission there at Revenue Research.
Okay, thank you very much.
All right. And please come back and be a guest anytime. All right. And for you, Joanne, what do you like to do in and around Atlanta when you're not changing the world over there at Homes at Law?
This weekend, I really capitalized on the great weather. I love to garden. It's nice balance to practicing law, to go play in the dirt for a little while. Mm-hmm. I'm involved in my community, as I said, with the local high school that has an entrepreneurship program. My family supports our local food pantry, the Southeastern Gwinnett Cooperative Ministry pantry. And then again, just trying to get out through SCORE and other resources. I'm a member of the Gwinnett Women Small Business Owners Collective. So from time to time, organizations will ask me to come out and teach them some basics around business law and intellectual property. Mm-hmm. So I try to make the most of those opportunities to use what I love to do to help small businesses grow.
Sounds like you're just busy all the time. And you're also a graduate of Stanford. So do you guys get together regularly here in Atlanta? Is there a chapter that you guys get together and do fun things with?
There absolutely is at Georgia. I actually do interviewing for prospective students.
Who want to join the group?
Who want to attend the farm.
Oh, who want to go and be a student. So you join interview local Atlanta prospective students.
That's right.
Interesting.
They want to join the Nerd Nation. It's a good group to participate in. Yeah. So yeah, absolutely. I do that through my alumni network. And actually my daughter and I just over the past couple weekends did a community service project with Books for Africa. And every year we get together as a Stanford alumni organization and go out and do community service work.
You just got it going on big time over there for sure. Thank you so much, Joanne. Please come back and be a guest. We look forward to more great things from you 2016 and beyond.
Thank you, Ryan.
All right. And Thad, for you, what do you like to do? Are you riding bikes all the time or what's your story?
I do ride a bike occasionally. Down around Chattahoochee River sometimes.
Do you lock it? How do you lock it up?
I actually just put it in the back of my car and drive it back home.
Okay.
I'm working on that so I can go ahead and lock it up there. I enjoy downtown Roswell. And also,
Alive After Five? You can go on a pair of Thursdays?
Yeah. And then also Atlanta Tech Village as well. There's a lot of good events that go on down there. I'm usually the guy in the lobby who's got a laptop open. So people will notice me from there. A lot of other startup events I go to around town when I'm not heads down on trying to get my startup launched in the Atlanta area.
Yes.
But other than that, in the fall, I help the Boy Scouts with the Georgia Tech ushering and flag raising type stuff because I'm an Eagle Scout. And what you were talking about earlier about martial arts, I'm also a black belt in martial arts. So I help with other people trying to, you know, get an understanding of what that is because a lot of people just think it's a Jet Li movie or something like that.
No, there's a lot of hard work and study and discipline that goes into that.
Oh, most definitely. Most definitely. And that, I think that's actually what's driven me to be able to get my product out as a demo. We actually, one thing I forgot to mention earlier, we actually can access Martyr Breeze cards as well. So now, so if you had a Martyr Breeze card and see us out with the bike rack, just go ahead and use that on the device.
Just tap it.
Yeah, just tap it. And it takes that unique ID right off it and stores it. But yeah, no, it's, I enjoy the startup community and all the different activities that are around, just really deep into it. And also just enjoying, actually you said the beautiful weather gardening. Fantastic. I've got parents have a great garden that I help them out with. Kale's been coming in recently, so it's really good. Just got to keep the deer away from the green beans. That's the hardest part.
Yeah, keeping those deer away. So thank you so much, Thad, for joining us. Please come on back anytime and be a guest. We'd love to feature you. And thank you to all of our listeners for supporting us and tuning in today. Thank you to Ali G for keeping us straight on the controls there. Thank you to Stone and Lee for making all this happen. And on behalf of the entire Business Radio X family, I'm Ryan Redhawk McPherson. We will see you on the radio.